America Trends. Thank you for being with us for this hour. I'm Amy Fuller. You are with the U2 America TV network and Biz Talk Radio. Glad to have you along. Coming up, May is Mental Health Awareness Month. Did you know? A few things we're going to talk about with Dr. John Huber of Mainstream Mental Health. That's mainstreammentalhealth.org, a nonprofit he runs to try to help people all over the globe, sort of recognizing the signs. And you know, you may have some things in your life and not even realize that you are dealing with maybe some sort of clinical depression where you could get a diagnosis and get some help that you really need that, again, you weren't aware of. We're going to look at some of the signs also that people don't understand about people with depression, why they are sometimes tired, sometimes late, just things like this. Dr. Huber is going to break it all down with us. Also, you might have heard President Trump wants to start something called a Space Force, right? Just after May the 4th be with you. So just a little interesting. But we are going to talk about how you can't do it on the cheap. And that's according to Colonel Rob Manis, a friend of the show. And he's going to come back on and talk this hour about his thoughts on what it will take to get a Space Force going. He also has some, he's a writer for OpsLens.com, and he's got some heavy opinions on politicizing key U.S. intelligence agencies. He's written about that. He's going to chat with us coming up in just a few moments. But first, let's chat just some about some of the trending topics just in the news and on Twitter and also social media sites, other social media sites today. There he is, President Trump's former lawyer, Michael Cohen, reportedly showed up for prison today, started a 3-year sentence for crimes unrelated to the president. Cohen, of course, completely turned on President Trump in an attempt to lessen his prison sentence. He lashed out at Trump one more time today. He said, quote, "There still remains much to be told, and I look forward to the day that I can share the truth." The owner of that horse that was disqualified at the Kentucky Derby Saturday says he is going to appeal. They're not happy at all, obviously. A lot of the crowd wasn't either. The horse, called Maximum Security, finished first, but was disqualified after an interference objection. Now, owner Gary West is taking the case to the State Racing Commission. Here's a bit of that video. He also revealed his horse will not be running in the Preakness Stakes. I just want to mention, Kate Delaney, our friend of the show, will be here later this week to talk about this whole fiasco. She's a longtime sports reporter and author of Invading the Man Cave. And it just so happens, her cousin trained the horse that was disqualified. She's going to give us the very latest on the updates for the appeal and just talk about everything that happened. Crazy, right? Now, this is probably the biggest thing trending on social media. There's a new royal baby. Yes, it's Prince Harry and Meghan. Duchess of Sussex is her official name. She gave birth to a healthy baby boy. He is 7th in line for the crown, and his proud dad had a bit to say. Listen.
I'm very excited to announce that Meghan and myself had a baby boy early this morning, a very healthy boy. Mother and baby are doing incredibly well. It's been the most amazing experience I can ever possibly imagine. How any woman does what they do is beyond comprehension, but we're both absolutely thrilled. And so grateful to all the love and support for everybody out there, from everybody out there. It's been amazing. So we just wanted to share this with everybody.
And what about names? Are you still thinking about names?
Still thinking about names, Alan. The baby's a little bit overdue, so we've had a little bit of time to think about it. But we're still. That's the next bit. But for us, I think we'll be seeing you guys in probably 2 days' time, as planned, as a family, to be able to share it with you guys, and so everyone can see the baby. I haven't been at many births. this is definitely my first birth. But it was amazing, absolutely incredible. As I said, I'm so incredibly proud of my wife. And as every father and parent would ever say, you know, your baby is absolutely amazing. But this little thing is absolutely to die for. So I'm just over the moon. Thank you very much, guys.
Give me your attention, baby. I gotta tell you a little something about yourself. You're one of
Welcome back to America Trends. I'm Amy Fuller. Glad to have you with us. You know, you may have heard President Trump made a major announcement a few months back. He wants to start a space force, and he is all systems go with that. Also, we are chatting about a few things with the Honorable Colonel Rob Manis, who is just a decorated combat veteran, contributor at OpsLens.com, and host of the Rob Manis Show on Blaze TV. And Colonel, we're so pleased to have you on. I've been looking forward to talking to you for some time, but it's been a minute since you've been on America Trends. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Amy. Thanks for having me back.
You bet. Can you tell us a little bit more about your background? I know you've done some, you've been running in some races and trying to serve even further your community in the past few years.
Well, I left the Air Force in 2011 after 32 years and quickly realized that the folks we were putting in Congress really weren't keeping their oaths of office and following the Constitution of the United States. So I decided to run. And I ran for the U.S. Senate against Mary Landrieu and another Republican. Unfortunately, the Republican Party likes to go with those that they pick instead of young upstarts like I was at the time. And we did well, but we did not make it into the Senate. However, we did get a Republican into that Senate and defeated Mary Landrieu. So we're pleased about that. And we've been dabbling in politics for quite some time since then, and currently I'm the chairman of a federal super PAC called Gator PAC, G-A-T-O-R-P-A-C. You can find out more about it at GatorPAC.com. And we have a project for 2020 called the Veterans Leadership Fund, and we'd love to get your support because veterans don't have the financial and fundraising networks that most people have because they've spent their entire lives serving their country. And it's a tough job to raise funds to win and get an elected office for a veteran.
Boy, they sure did. And, you know, we're going to have you on here just a dedicated segment to talking about veterans issues. So a veterans super PAC, I'd like you to repeat where people can go to support you. One of the things we love to do here at America Trends and on You to America all together is support our veterans and do something that gives back. And so if we can give a voice. So if you could give your website again, because I love that you are doing, you know, some of this legwork that we can't do. We want to support our veterans and do good by them. But how can we support you in doing, again, being on the front lines?
Sure. It's GatorPAC.com, G-A-T-O-R-P-A-C.com. And it's our Veterans Leadership Fund project. There's a big red button right there in the body of that website that'll take you to a donation page. And that's what we need most of is help from our citizens all across the country to help get veterans into Congress in 2020.
This is so good. What are some of your biggest reasons for being for Gator PAC? Is it VA and things like that and getting people, you know, more ingrained and helping with PTSD and things like that?
Well, we do want to get veterans in office so that they can deal with the VA. And basically, Congress has to make the VA do what it's supposed to do, unfortunately, because the bureaucracy is so bad. Mm-hmm. Even though we have good people in the organization, many of them are veterans. Congressional legislation has to be passed all the time to get the VA to do what it's supposed to do. That's one of the issues. But the real big issue is we want a country that follows the Constitution of the United States, and we want limited government, we want lower taxes, we want a pro-business climate, so which means more prosperity for Joe and Sally, the average Americans mm-hmm. out there that are citizens, and that's what government is supposed to be about, is making sure that individuals are free to prosper and live as freely as they possibly can here in the United States of America. So we want to limit government, restrain it, lower taxes, make sure we can all be as prosperous as possible.
For sure. I mean, you say Joe and Sally, but especially G.I. Joe and Sally, people who have given up so many years of their lives and so many other things to dedicate themselves to keeping our freedoms and letting us have the sort of country where everybody wants to come to. So, we're going to talk about that more with you in coming weeks. We hope to have you back really soon. But I also know that you write for OpsLens.com, and people can go there and look at some of your recent columns and your past ones. And you had some things to say about the Space Force. And so you say we can't do it on the cheap, but do you on the whole think it's a good idea?
Absolutely. You know, the title was catchy to get people to read the article. And I mean it. You can't do it on the cheap. And what that means is that we've got to go all in. And we really need to go all in sooner rather than later. The Chinese and the Russians and other nations already are coming up to meet our capabilities in space. Some may even have exceeded them from a military perspective. So as we all know that are used to planning wars and winning wars, if you control the high ground on the battlefield, then you are that much better off if you actually have to go to war. So defensively, you want to try to control that high ground. And space is the ultimate high ground when it comes to war here on the surface of the Earth and through the atmosphere and on the sea. So we want to get there. We want to stay there. And we want to make our capability much more than what it is today, which is great from a GPS, a communications perspective, some intelligence capabilities. But we've actually got to get a defensive force in place. And the only way to do that is to establish a space force. And historically, if you look at the creation of the United States Air Force and how it came to be over a 60 to 70 period of years, it took too long. We ended up entering World War II without a U.S. Air Force. We had an Army Air Corps at the time that we entered World War II. So that probably cost lives that didn't need to happen because we weren't organized properly and we weren't trained properly as separate services, Army, Navy, and Air Force at the time during World War II. So now's the time. The other issue is budgetary. The actual Air Force split came about because its budget subsumed the ground forces budget of the U.S. Army after World War II almost immediately, and that's what led to the National Security Act of 1947 that President Truman signed, creating the U.S. Air Force as a separate service. Well, we are beyond that already. The space forces that we currently fund are very expensive, and they take up large portions of the U.S. Air Force's budget. And as General Chuck Horner said, who was the air commander in Desert Storm and Desert Shield, he said back in 1997 openly that if the Air Force doesn't let go and stop clinging to its ownership of space, then the ensuing budget battles of the future, which we're in the future that he was talking about now, will be making trade-offs between the Air Force and space assets within the Air Force instead of making trade-offs on other things.
Oh, it's interesting. So many interesting things you said right there, how young our Air Force is. We're going to talk about that and more, including if we were surprised by the Space Force announcement coming up. It was just about a year ago, boy, already, when President Trump first started mentioning that he wanted to have a sixth branch and start a space force. And sounds pretty good to a lot of people, including Colonel Rob Manis, who writes for Ops Lens. He has a recent article talking about that it should be done, but it can't be done on the cheap. Colonel, how far has he gotten? I mean, is it just talk so far, or have any plans been instituted? And is he talking to people like you and trying to glean some information on how best to do this?
Well, a plan has been implemented, although it's going very slowly, and it shouldn't be. There's no reason for it to go slowly. And it's also smaller than what the president intended. What the Air Force has proposed and is starting to implement now is a U.S. Space Corps, similar to the U.S. Army Air Corps that was established back in the late 1930s as we went into World War II. And what the Space Corps will do is put a chief of staff on the Joint Chiefs board, working for the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, but it will not give it separate budgetary authority. It will continue to remain under the bureaucracy of the Department of the Air Force and the Secretary of the Air Force. And that's a concern. It's the same concerns that a person like me would have had with the Air Corps versus a full Air Force as we were going into World War II in the 1930s and early 40s. And that is that we want the service to be independent enough and powerful enough from a budgetary and capability perspective to be able to act on its own, and act on its own from not only a military defensive perspective, but from an offensive perspective, and not be linked to the U.S. Air Force, because the doctrine and theories of operating are very, very different between an Air Force and a Space Force. And the longer that we wait to get the Space Force out from under the Air Force itself, again, the budgetary thing is going to be the biggest factor that the Air Force will face, because they will continue to have to make trade-offs between Air Forces and Space Forces instead of having them made somewhere else when there's a separate entire department of a U.S. Space Force. So that's what I meant by you can't do it on the cheap in my title, is that going to a U.S. Space Corps needs to be a very short-term option, as only a short step to get to a U.S. Space Force with a department and a separate service completely, so that we can achieve that defensive capability and offensive capability that we need to be able to defeat any adversary.
And you can find this article at OpsLens.com. Space Force, You Can't Do It on the Cheap, by Rob Manis, Colonel Rob Manis, retired. And it's just so interesting. We live in just the most amazing times. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out. But I have to ask you one more question before we move on. Regarding the Space Force, I think, again, you applaud President Trump. You're not necessarily his biggest fan, but were you surprised that he did decide to make this a priority? It seems so simple, and perhaps we should have thought of it sooner.
Well, many people have been advocating for a separate Space Force for three or four decades now. But I'm not surprised that President Trump did it. He's an innovator. He's an entrepreneur. He thinks like that, and he thinks like a corporate CEO instead of like a bureaucrat. And that is why it didn't surprise me at all. The only surprise that got me off guard was that the Air Force decided to go down this Space Corps route, because I know what the actual Space Force's budget looks like and how large it is, because you see there's two parts to it. There's the public part, and then there's the part that's in the classified world that the rest of the public doesn't get to see. And when you put those two pieces together, it's quite large and quite subsuming of the entire budget of the United States Air Force itself. So the generals wearing Air Force blue and concerned about fighting and winning wars from the air and in cyberspace really have a tough job when they're trying to fight for budgetary funds to do the R&D, the research and development that we need to be doing from an air perspective, and maintaining and operating our air forces, especially since the country's still at war.
Yeah, people don't realize that either. Another thing that you have been advocating for is people paying attention to the fact, and so many people are talking about this, and it's just disgusting what's been happening in the past few years. Key U.S. intelligence agencies are so politicized, and partisan elected officials have caused, as you say, very grave damage to America. Can you count the ways for us and tell us what should be done? Could we ever get over this?
Yes, we can get over it. I've been writing about the politicization in the intelligence agencies since early January 2017, when I first got my eyes on the so-called Russia election meddling national intelligence estimate. The official term for it is now the intelligence capability assessment on Russia that President Obama actually ordered. Here's the way to get to it, though. The way we get to it is, we do need to investigate the investigators, as the media likes to put it, that took us through the Russia hoax collusion, the Russia collusion hoax, and those kind of things. But the way to really get to it and fix what went wrong is we have to do a full spectrum analysis all the way back beyond 2016 and look at presidential decision making. And there are records of that. You can see that the Washington Post, I think I quoted it in my latest article that Human Events published yesterday. The Washington Post actually wrote about an organization called the Deputies Meeting that is a meeting of people like cabinet secretaries, maybe the vice president, key intelligence folks, a national security advisor. Those types of meetings are stood up or created in a crisis situation. Well, the Washington Post said that the deputies meeting was occurring already in June 2016, And the members of it, the key members of it, were James Clapper, the Director of National Intelligence, John Brennan, the Central Intelligence Agency, James Comey, the head of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, Susan Rice, the National Security Advisor, and then later, and this is a big one, and then later, Vice President Joe Biden joined these meetings, and those were the meetings that developed the key information and key talking points that would go to the President of the United States, because that's what a deputy's meeting is about, is to take, analyze and take information that's important for the President to make a decision on in a crisis. And those meetings would have developed those decision points using intelligence information, and both classified and unclassified and open source media, to take to the President to get him to make decisions. The only way we will get past this and fix it and keep this from ever happening again, keep in mind what's happened here. What's happened here is a counterintelligence investigation was opened using spies, people to go in and make contact with Trump campaign people over in Europe, in the United States, and to actually get them to say things and do things so that they could keep track of what was going on in the campaign. That's one part of it. That was going on, I believe, in early 2016, if not late 2015. So we have to look at all of the president's decision making, President Obama's, at least back into 2015 on this matter, and look at what the deputies' meetings were developing, what was being presented to him, and what decisions were coming out of his office, to see why the intelligence agencies became politicized and how and why they took the actions that they did, which were very, very extreme from an American perspective.
Sure. And AG Barr says he will be investigating the investigators. We will see how that comes and have you back to chat about it. Colonel Rob Manis, check him out on his websites and at OpLens.com. Thank you so much. Spent 24 hours, I need more hours with you. There are a few things that people who don't suffer from depression cannot ever really understand. We're going to chat about that in the next few moments with Dr. John Huber of Mainstream Mental Health. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, so what better time to sort of put the spotlight on it? And unless you have some of these issues and know that the simplest of tasks are very, very draining, what being tired actually means, neglect of basic care of yourself, and what it means to have no motivation, these are things you really cannot glean. But if you have any type of depression, sometimes these are oh so familiar. So Dr. Huber, we really appreciate what you do 24/7, 365 days a year with mainstreammentalhealth.org. This is a nonprofit you do along with all your other, you know, real life work. And tell us a little bit about, do you know actually how, I mean, we always have these months and weeks and days where we try to spotlight things that are valuable for Americans to pay attention to. So it's good that we are putting the spotlight on depression and mental health in May, because it doesn't always mean what people think it might mean.
Absolutely. And, you know, we have weeks and days throughout the whole year that do specific mental health issues, whether it's suicide, depression itself, or, you know, schizophrenia, those different types of things. This month is all about everything in mental health, and we should be out there talking about it and sharing our information with everybody, because, you know, the reality of it is it doesn't mean you're broken. It's a human thing, and we need to treat it that way.
Yeah. And the thing about it is, you sort of feel, you and I, because I've been in the media for years and you've been on the front lines of this for years, we feel like, boy, in recent decades, we've made so much headway with letting people know that it's not something to be ashamed of. It's something to be treated just like if you had cancer, heart disease, anything else. However, there are always new people get coming of age and finding out they have issues that might not have heard the message. Or adults who have never dealt with it before, where something tremendous has happened and they have clinical depression because of some sort of grief, or they might arrive at some sort of you know, chemical change in their brain where this needs to be looked at, and they may not really realize this is what you're suffering from, and it is very much treatable, right?
It is. And, you know, not everything works for everybody. So, you know, you have to go in there. And we have new advances, DNA testing, to see if you have receptor sites that you're missing or not enough generation of different neurotransmitters.
Oh, wow.
And we can replace those. And it's some amazing things. But as aware as we think people are today, I mean, a recent study came out just a few weeks ago, said 1 in 5 young people in America have a diagnosable disorder. And of those 1 in 5, only 1 in 3 are actually getting treatment. Now, the sad thing is that is a significant increase in people getting treatment. And it's only 30%, 33% of those people getting treatment. So we have a long way to go. But the fact is it's getting more frequent, and we're getting better at what we do.
We want people to be treated, and some people are afraid to step forward and ask for help. You know, you have everything from people who are so depressed and have it's such a polarization that they are suicidal. But other people have maybe a minor depression, which it doesn't feel minor if you're the one, that can be so treatable with a variety of things if they just step forward. So even the smallest amount of depression could really change your life if you get help, is what I'm trying to say. So I love that you are just really trying to put the word out there. So let's go over some of the things that you might not understand about people. I mean, if you don't have this, you might have people in your midst, and this could be a month where you could try to understand what they're going through, family members, colleagues. And number one, the simplest of tasks are very draining with somebody with depression.
Absolutely. I mean, something just as simple as brushing your teeth mm-hmm. can feel like an act of Congress to make it happen. I mean, there's no motivation. And it's not that, oh, you know, it's important. It just feels pointless. And, you know, why? And it's more than just being sad. This is overwhelming. And it encompasses your whole life, your whole being.
Mm-hmm. And what being tired actually means, that's another one. But then also why going out and being social seems like a much worse idea than staying home and doing nothing.
Well, yeah, I mean, it does seem like an overwhelming task. Again, it's like, why would you go out and if you're depressed, go out with people who are not depressed and who feel like life is great and wonderful? Why would you want to be around that? I mean, it's like you feel even worse because everybody around you is loving life, and you feel like your life is that much worse than what it really is.
And the fourth item on this little list that we have is, as you say, even brushing your teeth. Basic care of yourself seems like, why bother showering, brushing your teeth? You're just going to have to go through it later in the day or the next day and things like that.
Exactly. Those are things that we do over and over and over, and they seem pointless. You know, you may sit there and think, well, you know, I'm going to get cavities anyway, so why mess with it? And or I'm not eating anything right now anyhow, so why would I want to do that? It's just physically demanding. It's not just, you know, something, a simple task that most of us just do it and don't even think about it. Put a little toothpaste on your brush and go at it for a couple of minutes. The reality of it is they start feeling like they're having to jump across the Grand Canyon just to get out of bed and into the bathroom to brush their teeth. And mm-hmm. it's just, why bother? It's too overwhelming.
Right. A fifth item is what it feels like to have no motivation. And there are times, you know, we all have times when we're a little, maybe a little down, or we may just be very tired and we don't feel like doing anything. It's a normal part of being human. But depression, you can literally feel as if there's no point in anything. And so the motivation is a huge thing as well. And, you know, I almost want to ask you, how can we even, I mean, you probably tell your patients, I get you're a doctor, not me, but how to take even just a baby step forward can mean so much.
It is overwhelming to these individuals that are suffering. And, you know, they think in it's either black or white. In other words, why would I go and do all this stuff? Why would I go to college and get a degree when we're all going to die anyway? You know, they don't look at it as, oh, but it's going to, you know, I'm 19 years old now. My life expectancy is 84. You know, it's 54 more years down the road, 64 more years down the road. Why would I not go to college? The normal person who's not depressed is thinking, but this person who's depressed is, why? I'm going to die, so I shouldn't be doing something that, you know, is setting me up for ultimately wasting my time.
No, it's interesting you mentioned college, though, and why should I go do this, that, and the other, because I do always think about teenagers, and sometimes you don't know teenage angst and hormonal things from depression. And then they go off to college and they start to think, you know, am I really going through something, or is this normal, you know, getting away from the nest? And then that's also, those are some of the years when things like schizophrenia start to present. So there's really a lot for these kids to pay attention to. Colleges and parents have a lot on their hands.
Absolutely. The average time frame where most mental health issues pop up is between the ages of 16 and 25 or 26 years of age. You've got about a 10-year window there. Yeah. And it starts slowly, just a few percentage points get it, you know, before then. And then it tapers off after 25 or 26 years of age. And man, that's right when you're in the middle of building the groundwork for who you are and what you're going to do and where you're going to go, meeting maybe your life mate, that type of thing. And it can really put a wrench in things.
Boy, Dr. Huber, we just really appreciate what you do again all year round with mainstreammentalhealth.org. And I know that you urge people, if they have any inkling that they might have an issue, if you're going through any type of depression, especially if you're going through a life change, college, a crisis, grief, reach out and get help. People do care about you. May is Mental Health Awareness Month. Thank you so much, Dr. Huber. Take you on a little trip right now to Salt Lake City, and we are chatting in the next few minutes with Scott Beck. He is president and CEO of Visit Salt Lake, and you can find it right here at visitsaltlake.com. He's a native of Utah, born and raised with tourism as a driving force in his family. And if you do any research on your family and ancestry, you may have taken you to Utah and the Salt Lake area already. So I was sort of intrigued to hear that Scott will be joining us here on America Trends. Welcome, Mr. Beck. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. And please, it's Scott.
All right, Scott. All right. Well, it's Amy. Okay. So you've had this, you've had tourism in your family for some time. And again, I love this because people who have been, you know, with Ancestry and 23andMe in recent years being such a trend in America, people tracing their roots, Utah is such a destination for people who want to go and actually look at the files and find things out about their families.
Yeah, we've long been the genealogy capital of the world. We welcome people every single day. And now with the proliferation of the internet, what you can do online is really just a game changer.
So great. And it's beautiful country. My great, great grandmother was born in Moab. And you know, I have family who helped establish the state of Utah. And it's neat because your very state helps us find all these things out, right?
Right.
This is a family business of yours, though, which, you know, connects. So how far back has it gone in your genealogy?
Wow, my dad started in the ski industry in 1969. He was hired to be the general manager of Sundance Resort and was there until the mid-80s. And as a young member of our family, our role was to be an indentured servant and work every weekend and nights. And so grew up working in the ski industry and in the resort and just never left.
The kids are like little interns, right? It's the family business. What you say, that's all part of what you call the urban renaissance there that has a few other elements.
Right. I think you mentioned what I think most people recognize from Utah, and that is our iconic landscapes, Delicate Arch and the Red Rock of Moab and the surrounding area. But what's been really incredible from my perspective, being a lifelong Utahan, is the incredible sort of growth of Salt Lake as a major urban hub. We're now, you know, 1.2 million people and have all the amenities and all of the wonderful urbanness that comes with having a very, very dense population. And it's really fun to see all this emerging new art and culture and entertainment and, you know, the foodiness of Salt Lake sort of coming to its own and really surprise people on a daily basis.
And you also talk about another trend in America and around where our studio is in Southern California, these breweries, these craft breweries that, you know, just are all the rage. But you have some great ones there as well.
We do, and award-winning ones. And it always surprises people that in a place that most people associate with dryness and soberness, that we have a wonderful craft brewery community and even handcrafted distilleries. We have a really, really strong connection to entrepreneurship and innovation, and those things go hand in hand with today's ability to microbrew and to do, you know, handcrafted spirits. Really something that's part and, you know, just part of our culture.
And speaking of culture, some of the cultural arts are really growing there in recent years.
Yeah, we're really lucky in the community of our size to have a full-time ballet, a full-time opera, a full-time symphony, and to be supported at the level that they are. And then what that sort of creates in terms of a creative community, are, you know, black box theater community, to our dance community, to the music community. It's very unexpected in a city the size of Salt Lake, and something that we are very, very proud of as locals.
We are chatting with Scott Beck, the president and CEO of Visit Salt Lake, and he's been doing this since 2005. Scott, you've been doing this for a while. When did you really see a surge of what you thought, boy, we are really growing in such a way that this needs to be talked about, spoken about even more than it already is? Like, when did these breweries come around? And I am sure it's been growing over the years, but was there any place where you actually saw a nexus where you said, this is so interesting?
Yeah, I think our seminal moment came in 2002, when the people sort of came and got to experience Salt Lake during the 2002 Winter Olympic Games.
Sure.
Arguably, you know, our first ever appearance on the international stage, and especially in the winter sort of sporting arena. But that was really a genesis when people were exposed to it, and then the exponential growth of once people find out about it, and then you have more opportunities to create small businesses, more opportunities to welcome more and more people. And that was really, I think, where it all started. Was right after the 2002 Olympics. You just saw a lot of growth in all of the things that people did when they came here. So think restaurants and nightlife and all the stuff that goes around hosting the Winter Games. Those stuff all had their sort of epicenter right after the 2002 Winter Games.
But it had to be such an amazing time to be there. And also Salt Lake, you call it AKA Ski City, because there are just some really cool world-class resorts you won't find anywhere else.
We kind of call it the only ski city. There's no place else in the country that within, you know, 40 minutes from a really dense urban population with an NBA team and ballet and all the various restaurants, where you can be to one of the four greatest ski resorts in North America, whether that's Alta, Brighton, Snowbird, or Solitude. It really is such an incredible place to land at the airport within 10 minutes being downtown Salt Lake, at your hotel the next morning, wake up and just have your choice of where you want to go. It's a fairly unique situation. We feel that there was some favorites played when our sort of geography was laid out.
That could be. VisitSaltLake.com is the website. Scott, any last words for our viewers and listeners before we say goodbye? And we really thank you for coming on.
No, other than we'd love to see you. Come and visit. We'd love to show you our city. We're very proud of it.
Well, thank you for sharing. We just love to show just a taste of America. And Scott, best of luck, and keep us posted on all the great things that are happening in Salt Lake, okay?
We will. Thank you for the time.
You bet. We appreciate it. Well, thank you for being with America Trends, too. We want to tell you, this is what you guys have trending at number one on YouTube and Twitter and beyond. Spider-Man Far From Home, the trailer has dropped, and we are going to show some of it coming up on America Trends. But first, you have to know, if you haven't seen Endgame Avengers, some spoilers, so beware.
We could have used someone like you on my world.
Your world?
Beck is from Earth, just not ours.
A snap to our hole in our dimension.
You're saying there's a multiverse?
We have a job to do, and you're coming with us.
There's gotta be someone else you can use.
What about Thor?
Off-world.
Captain Marvel.
Unavailable.
But I'm just a friendly neighborhood Spider-Man.
Bitch, please, you've been to space.
What do you want, Peter?
I want to go back on my trip with the girl who I really like and tell her how I feel.
MJ,
I
am Spider-Man.
Oh!
regular deal with the pump. You know if there's a... Gotta get it up. Oh! Oh, no! Ah! Oh, everybody lost there. Our YouTube America audience just saw some of the best pet trending video online, and we thank them and our Biz Talk Radio people for being with us. And we want to remind you, you can find us 24/7 on our websites and on social media. We would love to connect with you and hang out just all the time. That's what the internet's for, right? Check out our Biz Talk Radio website as well. We have our past podcast and also our previous shows from You to America. So we will see you all there right now, perhaps. Finally, tonight, trending at number one on YouTube, and this is according to you, and it's trending on Twitter and beyond, Spider-Man Far From Home, the final big trailer dropped today. The movie is out July 2nd, and we are going to give you now your very first look.
The Spider-Man Far From Home trailer is about to play, but if you haven't seen Avengers Endgame yet, stop watching, because there's some serious spoilers about to come up. But if you have seen Avengers Endgame, enjoy the trailer.
Everywhere I go, I see his face. I just really miss him.
Yeah, I miss him too. I don't think Tony would have done what he did if he didn't know that you were going to be here after he was gone.
You gonna be the next Iron Man now?
Well, no, I don't have time. I'm too busy doing your jobs.
What?
I'm kidding, I'm kidding. Look,
keep up the good work.
Because I am going on vacation.
Heads up, Nick Fury's calling you.
I don't really want to talk to Nick
Fury.
Answer
the phone.
Why?
Because if you don't talk to him, then I have to talk to him. I don't want to talk to him. You sent Nick Fury to voicemail?
I gotta go.
You do not ghost Nick Fury.
What up, dorks?
What's up? We're just talking about the trip.
I'm here in St. Marco Polo's.
Oh, I think MJ really likes me.
That reminds me when I first fell in love.
You're a very difficult person to contact, Spider-Man. This is Mr. Beck.
We could have used someone like you on my world.
Your world?
Beck is from Earth, just not ours.
A snap to our hole in our dimension.
You're saying there's a multiverse?
We have a job to do, and you're coming with us.
Be someone else you can use.
What about Thor?
Off-world.
Captain Marvel.
Unavailable.
But I'm just a friendly neighborhood Spider-Man.
Bitch, please, you've been to space.
What do you want, Peter?
I want to go back on my trip with the girl who I really like and tell her how I feel.
MJ,
I am Spider-Man.
No, of course I'm not.
I mean, it's kind of obvious.
You're right, you may not be ready, but this is my responsibility.
Saving the world requires sacrifice. Sometimes people die.
Oh my God.
I just always feel like I'm putting my friends in danger.
The world needs the next Iron Man.
Are you going to step up or not?
I work with Spider-Man.
You work for Spider-Man?
I work with Spider-Man, not for Spider-Man. New plan.